Hello, hello, and welcome to Reality TV. This week, we were brought Married at First Sight, holy shit, what an episode, 90 Day Fiancé, and the season premiere of Sister Wives. I know, all together now, father, son, holy TLC. It was amazing, and I cannot wait for this. Now, this week, or maybe it's next weekend, Seeking Sister Wife is coming back. So, of course, I'm going to have to talk about that if that annoying Snowden family is not on it. Because if they're on it, absolutely not will I give a moment of the very rare peace and quiet that I have to that family. They're the worst. Coming up on Patreon this week, I have some really good stuff to bring you with Amanda. We're going to be talking about the latest three episodes of Team Mom OG, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, and on Total Request Podcast, we're going to be talking about the world-famous documentary that FX is airing on Hulu right now. Make sure you search New York Times Presents, or else you're never going to find it. It is Framing Britney Spears, and a listener requested an episode of Bob's Burgers, and I've been getting so many DMs about it. I'm very excited to watch it for the very first time. And that episode is going to be season 5, episode, I believe it's 18, Eat, Spray, Linda. So check those out. The links are in the show notes, but I'm going to jump right in because we have a lot of TV to cover. 5 hours. So let's start with Married at First Sight because I'm type A and I need to have everything going in chronological order. Let's talk about Haley and Jacob first. I cannot stand Gronk. I think he's harmless. I don't think there's a mean bone in his body, but I just can't stand someone that is that boring and beige, but thinks they're really unique and cool. And the fact that this man could take 2 slices of raw onion and chomp on those things in front of his wife of 72 hours is enough to make any of us think that he is a true sociopath. Who the hell does that? I love onions. I don't know if I could eat raw ones. I mean, if I had to for, let's say, The Amazing Race or for a bet, I could absolutely do it, but it's not something I would choose to do, nor would I do it and then be sitting across the table from someone who you're hopefully trying to sleep with and be breathing into her face, talking about your freaking Star Wars kettlebells. My God. Now, not only does he lead with his Star Wars kettlebells, thinking that's going to be the thing that's going to get him in Haley's pants, he brings a pair of 80s neon, I don't know if they were like those little brake light-up sticks, those kind of sunglasses. He brought those on his honeymoon, and he has Haley wearing them. And I felt bad for her when I saw her round in the corner in those things, because there's no way she would voluntarily wear those or think it's a cute, quirky idea. She put those on in the innocence of thinking that this relationship could possibly go somewhere. But you know now, well, I'm just assuming that they get a divorce. I really don't know. I haven't looked at any spoilers because I don't want to do that. If I'm going to go into this season and watch it with a pure hatred in my heart, I want it to be genuine. So what am I saying here? Oh, right. So I'm assuming that they get divorced. Haley, looking back on that moment, she's probably thankful it was during COVID that they were filming, so not a resort full of people, plus the millions of people watching had to see her wearing those. Oh, and I guess we should discuss Jacob's Gronk's choice of clothing. Once again, Haley had to want to just lock herself in the bathroom. She was probably hoping Chris would throw her in the bathroom and lock her in there. This guy is dressed like a Jersey house husband. He's got embroidered jeans on the back. I saw the heavy stitched seaming on them, but I wasn't prepared for the stars on the back of his pockets. So we've got those jeans going for us. And then the black dress shirt. I am not a fan of dress shirts unless they're white, a shade of pastel, which basically narrows it down to what, pink and blue. That's all I like. I do not like a rust-colored dress shirt or a burgundy. It's like a man who wants to lead with his shirt. That's going to tell you about his personality. In a black dress shirt, button down, a button perhaps too many, and the collar that sprays out very geometrically, like two big triangles, that just says to me, I want my shirt to do the talking. I really feel like you ladies know what I'm talking about. The reason I'm not saying gentleman is because if you are a gentleman that is also interested in other gentlemen, you have way better taste than anyone like Jake. Now, paired with, to review, the black shirt, the embroidered jeans, the spiked hair, I forgot to mention that one. He spiked it up, you know, for a night out on the resort. He also starts talking about his love of the DeLorean. Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, first of all, it made me sad that Haley didn't even know what a DeLorean is because that makes me feel very old. But second, stop talking about the weird things that you like. It's clearly doing nothing for Haley except driving her to drink because girl was wasted at that dinner. They're all wasted later when they meet for even more cocktails, but she is drinking away her boredom being around Jake, and he is so clueless. I think it's safe to say no man or woman should lead their foreplay talking about Back to the Future. Although if I had a choice, I definitely would talk about Michael J. Fox and his amazing vest, which really inspired my love of any sort of a vest. But I digress. I would rather talk about that than listen to Gronk's jokes. He asks Haley, does a straw have one hole or two holes? And she doesn't know what the hell that's supposed to be neither. And she says one hole. And then he goes, well, I would, plus or minus, carry the one. I'd rather have two holes because, you know, I have a mouth and a butthole. What the fuck? Who is this guy? Who is this man that walked into the show, takes Haley down to a murder aquarium cave, and then starts talking about his butthole and his lack of probiotics and all this other kind of shit? Who is this guy and why did they put him on the show? He has zero personality. And Haley, on the other hand, I thought she was kind of beige and mousy at the beginning of the season, but compared to Jake, she is Miss America and she's had the best philanthropic speech we've ever heard. Now, let's scoot along to our next boring couple, and that's Clara and Ryan. Surprising, right? Because Clara is a huge personality. She's right on the fence for me, whether she's a little too loud and annoying and kind of like me, or whether I like her. I'm leaning towards like. I was skeptical, but I like her for the most part. But they're boring together because they're getting along, which is great, which is a lovely thing to see, but it's boring television when you're talking about, are they going to make it or not? Because Clara is a flight attendant, delayed flights, canceled flights. That could be a deal breaker. Really? Okay. The biggest takeaway for me this episode for these two was Clara knows how to find a swimsuit. Maybe it's a flight attendant thing. Maybe she has the hookup of where to find the best swimsuits because she came out in this one-piece black swimsuit and I nearly lost my shit because I rarely see a one-piece suit that I like that I think is cute on any body type, but she nailed it and I'm so jealous of her, but in a that a girl kind of way because I would love to be able to throw on a one-piece suit and have my boobs supported where they're not feeling like they're just becoming one with my body. I'm actually pushing my boobs down against my stomach the way anyone with any sort of chest feels in a one-piece suit. But the way she put that thing on and the way she made it look super cute and not dowdy, that suit and Clara gets the VIP award for this episode. Well, actually, it's going to go to Paige, but you guys know what I'm saying. Now, I'm saving the best, most cringy Belza de Ball for last, obviously Chris and Paige. So Virginia and Eric, some real boozy drinkers this episode. And of course, we're all blaming Virginia for that because I don't think she's been sober for any longer than a 3-hour stretch only because she was probably sleeping during that time. And I think the fact that Virginia puts on foundation to go down to the swimming pool tells us anything and everything we need or want to know about Virginia. Don't be that girl. Sure, wear a CC cream or a BB cream, a tinted moisturizer with SPF, but do not go down to any sort of pool in any sort of climate, even if it's Alaska and you're going to be sitting next to that hot tub. Do not wear a face full of foundation because I'm looking after you here. You're going to look crazy. That stuff is going to crease. It's going to cake. You're going to get oily, or it's going to settle into your fine lines and wrinkles that maybe some of you, definitely not me, ladies have. Let's just embrace the fact that we are allowed to not be wearing makeup all the time. Most of us are worrying about what we look like in a swimsuit and flip-flops already, and now we got to worry about if our skin is all one tone or not, all one color. God forbid we flush or have some dark circles underneath our eyes for taking care of everyone else except ourselves. Ugh, I just saw her do that and it triggered something in me that made me sad, actually, because she's 20-something years old with a guy who loves her already, who's head over heels for her, and she's putting on makeup. For who? For what? And I'm saying that I need to do this exact same thing. So can we just all band together, make a promise this summer, since we're probably not going to be out in public that much anyway, that we say no to foundation in the glaring bright sun, at least at a pool kind of setting. Again, tinted moisturizer, sunscreen, okay. Anything that says foundation on it, bad, boo. Also boo on this conversation that Eric and Virginia have later, this antiquated notion that men and women cannot truly be friends. If you ask me, which you probably are not, but I'm going to share my opinion anyway, I think it's possible that you could be best friends with someone of the same or opposite sex, depending on if you're in a same or opposite sex relationship. Anything is possible, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, if you're in a relationship and you're worried about your partner being friends or having a friend group with someone they may or may not be attracted to, or that person may or may not be attracted to them, it's about your relationship. Can you trust each other not to cheat? The fact that Eric is concerned, a guy that Virginia is friends with, thinking about having sex with her, he can't control that. So what does it matter? Even if the guy did think about having sex with Virginia, it doesn't mean he's going to act on it. It doesn't mean every guy on the planet except him is just some crazy animal that's going to run up to her and be like, I got to stick it in. It's crazy. That's even sort of a deal breaker of any sorts. It's just a non-conversation. I feel, or at least I hope, we've evolved beyond this. Now let's jump to this dinner later where clearly Eric is so freaking wasted. His eyes were, let's just say I don't want him flying and being the pilot on my Southwest flight. I wouldn't even want him as a flight attendant. He's got these Ramona sappy eyes. He gets all emotional, which is fine. But I think this novelty, as I've talked about before, will eventually wear off. I actually think these two will have a solid relationship for a while. I think they'll last maybe a year or so beyond the show. But I don't see this one lasting a long time. I mean, maybe they stay together and she ends up having kids. I just think their particular age gap at this point is pretty significant. It's not going to be in 5-10 years, but right now it is. I mean, the fact that Virginia thinks it's a big deal that Eric would be working 3 days away from home. Like, it's a huge determining factor whether she wants to have kids or not with him. That, to me, shows she doesn't really realize what having kids in a family is really like, and no one does until you have them. But you just do it. You make it work. And 3 days is not that big of a deal. It really isn't. A lot of people would love to make sure that their partner is home 24 hours a day for 4 days straight. And the fact that he could do 3 days, 3 days, 3 days, and then be home the rest of the month is a pretty sweet deal. I hope that Virginia realizes this and it's just a point of conversation that producers are telling them to have. I hope so. Like I said, I think they're going to make it for a while after the show because they're a cute couple. But I think over the course of time, Eric is going to want something different in a relationship that's not just always having cocktails or getting drunk by dinner or laughing and leaning sideways and leaving your jaw on the floor every time you move your freaking head or flick your hair or have a drink. Hopefully that's just a honeymoon thing, right? Let's hope so. All right, Brianna and Vincent. They're great, they're perfect, they're blissful, they're boring. And nothing is going to bring this beautiful to look at couple closer together than knowing some really juicy shit about another couple who's on the brink. That fourth wall, guys, that wasn't broken, that was kicked down kung fu fighting style. We started the episode with two producers talking to Chris, and they're very direct in telling him he has to tell Paige this devastating news. But Chris doesn't want to. He keeps brushing him off saying, but I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to tell her because I don't want to tell her. He said everybody else needed to know, but his wife didn't. What the hell is that? Well, actually, I can tell you what the hell that is. Either he's not going to get paid for future episodes or he's going to owe production money because they've invested this much into his marriage that they're going to be screwed going from a five-couple show to a four-couple show. So either he's getting fined or not paid or a combination of the both. That's why he's so upset. He's upset because of the money situation and the fact that this fake life that he's put up, that he's successful, he's this entrepreneur, XYZ, is going to blow up in his face because we're going to see him for the cowardly little man that he is. And that's the same reason why he had to go in the bathroom when he told Paige. He had to put on the shower and the tub and the sink because he didn't want people to be able to look him in the eye, so to speak, and have him tell the truth about anything. So here we are with Paige devastated. She goes down to talk to Brianna, you know, my princess, my favorite girl on the show, and talk about a great friendship they have. Brianna is exactly the type of friend you want to have in this moment because she's going to say everything that you would like to say, but you still have to have the upper hand and come across classy. So the first thing she says is, "What the fuck?" Then, of course, she asks how she is. And then the thing that every girl does, every person does when you find out someone's been doing something dirty, let's get that calendar and let's do the friggin' math. So they go backwards in time and they don't really go too clear into timeline on the show, but we can all kind of do the math here. If it was February when she supposedly got pregnant or they got together, engaged, they broke up in May, then he signed up for the show. Yeah, that means no matter what, day one, Chris went into this relationship, went into this marriage, bringing in a lot of drama and his ego, and now a baby. So now we have Vincent also getting dragged in on this. He gets called down to talk to Chris. And I love Vincent because much like a good girlfriend is going to do the opposite of this, a good guy friend is going to be like, yeah, you told her, right? You messed up and you told her, which is exactly what Vincent did. He knows the timeline is off. He knows there's no possible way that Chris could have come into this with a clean slate or a pure heart. He knows he's a pathetic piece of shit, which is why he was able to keep his cool in that moment. He's not going to lose his shit over someone like Chris. And he knows that he gets to go downstairs and tell Brianna all the juicy stuff he just learned, which is exactly what he did and what we all would do in that moment. Well, he shouldn't say all because Dave never tells me any good stuff. He never has any sort of gossip. Even if I know what's going on, I'll try to pry details out of him, but he says he didn't see anything or he totally forgot. So I guess I should say I would love if Vincent would come down and tell me all the freaking tea that happened during this Married at First Sight thing. Isn't that the best, you guys? Does anyone have a partner who's really good at that, who comes home and just spills everything? Or is it like our marriage, where just one of us is always desperate for a desperate housewife sort of situation to happen to talk about, but it never is really that exciting? Except Ooh, okay, hold on. I'll have to say one for Patreon because I actually have a really good story. I'll leave it vague about people close to me. I'll just leave that there. Okay, but let's talk about this dinner that Chris and Paige go to. It's Chris's attempt at a really lame apology. And they're at this weird restaurant where instead of swimming dolphins and shit like Jake and Haley, there were floating hams or something. It looked like a vending machine for rotisserie chicken. Very bizarre. I wouldn't be able to just stare at Chris's face while there's freaking ham hocks floating around in the background because I would want to grab one and beat the hell out of him with it. And kudos to the producer who was feeding Chris lines during this entire episode on what exactly to say to Paige, how exactly to word things. We know that he didn't think of that himself because at one point he laughs and Paige is like, this is my life. I'm not really sure what's so funny about this. And then after knowing her for 2.5 days and calling her ugly and not attractive to him, he is going to love her more than his child, his mom, his ex, because she is a beautiful woman, etc., etc. Okay, cool story, Father Chris. You know damn well he talked to his dad and his dad fed him those lines word for word because Chris would never come up with that by himself. Mommy and daddy are absolutely trying to save face for Chris. Obviously, this is not the first time in his life because that's why Chris is who he is. He's the overconfident asshole and he can do no wrong because he's learned to be that way. His parents always came to the rescue and created this beast, and we should have seen it from the first time we heard his dad talking all disgusting about his daughter-in-law. Paige, get your shit together and run. High knee sprint, hurdle the hell out of Vegas. And even though she said God may not give you things that you can't handle, listen, Oprah always told us that God and the universe speak to you in whispers, and when you don't listen, there's earthquakes created. And hopefully you'd think that Paige is feeling some contractions right about now. Am I right? And no single red rose that Chris pulls out of nowhere is going to fix that. Ew. What am I supposed to do with this single red rose? Find a piece of baby's breath to go with it? You freaking weirdo. I guess now might be a good time to share my final diagnosis of Chris. You know, I said I didn't think that he was fully evolved on that evolution of man chart. I'm going to say there is a 87% chance that he also carries the little person gene. Do you see it now? All right, so let's jump back to Brianna and Vincent after he goes back to Brianna and tells Brianna everything that he found out from Chris. I was so attracted to him in that moment. I hate that weird hat that he's wearing, but I loved the tea he was spilling. And I love that he was like, yeah, Paige needs to think about herself right now. Dip out and divorce Chris. Hello? Is there anything hotter than a man saying a woman should get divorced? You guys know what I'm talking about. It was super attractive. It was just very women power, very feminist to me, and I loved it. Now, this cocktail hour was yikes. I mean, Chris is already on another planet with his new former fake life crashing in on him, which is exactly why he had to go pout about not being as attracted to Paige as the other couples are. You know, because Chris always has to be the alpha male and he's always got to be the best according to him. So the fact that he couldn't be top dog in that situation and say, oh no, my wife is the hottest. I'm the most attracted to her than anyone's attracted to their wives. That's why he had to go boo-hoo in the corner. It was nothing about how he felt bad for Paige or how he's thinking about his ex or that he's being a dad. No, he didn't feel the same way about Paige as the other guys did about their wives. Boo-hoo. So by the time Virginia and Eric rolled in, drunk off their asses, and rude, I hate when people are late, but here they are, holding up all these other couples and production, by the way. Chris was already tipping far over the edge. He's ready to pour out his frustration on someone, and there's Eric's blinky face and Virginia's mouth wide open again. So he just starts snapping at them, slowly but very obviously to anyone except those two assholes over there. I was cringing because I feel like Eric is a better person than that, but he was so influenced and under the influence of Virginia and or her beverages that he came across as an oblivious asshole. Obviously, we know he just wasn't seeing it because he was drunk. But stop pushing it. Stop pushing his buttons. He's upset about something. Just ixnay on the AB bay. Okay, I'm going to take a real quick break and then let's get into 90 Day Fiancé. All right, 90 Day Fiancé. It's been a while. I missed it and I'm very excited to talk about it today. But first, I'm going to get our most boring, most, I won't say normal, most happy in love-ish couple, and that's Hazel and Tarek. Let's get him out of the way because there's nothing to talk about. Harry, Hazel's son, is good. He doesn't have COVID, thank goodness. And Tarek has a great tip. Drink some orange juice. Vitamin C will do the body good. And his little daughter, Ari, is adorable. She's so cute. She looks just like Tarek. I love her. All right, let's jump ahead past Brandon and Julia because we didn't get to see any of them this week. Mike and Natalie, let's sink in here a little bit. Try to put Natalie's big, scary face out of your mind for a moment. And let's think about the moon and the word controversial, which absolutely was not the word for the day, but Natalie chose it to be because, you know, she's going to take every opportunity, every controversial opportunity to talk about their relationship, which is what every person who's in a troubled relationship wants to do early, first thing in the morning when you're driving. God, she sucks at timing. Now they go to dinner. Oh, I guess I just put two and two together. Jesus Christ. Was that moon at night and they were going to dinner? Why do I feel like that was two completely different scenes? Probably because I looked into freaking Natalie's eyes, which is scary as hell, because she kept staring at him with doe eyes, which of course I have to bring up. I'll just do that now. She does this look that we all know where her face looks down, but her eyes look up. And she was doing that a lot at dinner. And I think that is probably the look that she thinks she can rope him in with because it's the look that she gives him when they're, you know, building that fire in her fireplace, if you know what I mean. He's putting his logs on the fire. Ew, that made me think more of poop than his log. But okay, anyway, she's disturbing, and that's why I think she does that look in the eyes, because she thinks it reminds him of sexy time, and she can get him to do whatever she wants during that time. She thinks that applies to everything, but it doesn't, because guess what? Mike doesn't want to go to psychology. He just wants to sit and eat his meat and drink his beer, and I don't blame him. I am a huge fan of therapy. I think it works if you want it to work. I think it is backed by science. It's not all cuckoo shit unless you're blowing snot into each other's faces like Deandra on Real Housewives of Dallas. But I get why Mike doesn't want to go, because if they can only talk about their relationship, their communication issues when someone else is there, then that's not a good place to even start. Like, why can't they just talk normally at home? When he asks her, hey, what's going on? What's wrong? And she says nothing and then skips around and makes out with a tree and then wants to be lifted up and a triple axel flung around on his arm. What the hell is he supposed to do? Why can't she just talk about this normally or at the table? He said, what do you want to talk about there? And she's like, no, I just want to talk there. We'll talk about it there. That's what we need to talk about. Well, he's asking you now. Share your feelings now with him. I mean, I think they should go. Don't get me wrong. I just understand why he doesn't want to go. However, he doesn't realize that for the same reason Natalie wants to go, I almost called her Virginia from Married at First Sight, Jesus. The reason she wants to go is because she thinks a therapist is going to take her side and tell Mike he needs to change everything about himself. Mike should probably realize the same thing, that a therapist may, I hate to say take sides because they really don't, but a therapist might be able to validate some of the things he's saying and say it for him and Natalie understand it, digest it. Will she though? No, because she's a narcissist and she thinks she's perfect. Okay, so let's talk about, oh, later, when they're hanging out, I thought Mike had a great suggestion. Let's just chill out here, have a couple cocktails, maybe get drunk. And again, she's got to spoil the mood and say, no, let's talk about going to the therapist. Again, I think she's right. They should go. But she takes every single opportunity to destroy a moment. Even if he didn't say, let's have cocktails and drink, because she's not a big drinker. If he said, hey, let's play rearrange the closet and the drawers, she would probably say, no, I don't want to right now because you don't want to. You told me I only have these drawers. You know what I mean? She's just that girl that's always going to set her up for being a victim so she can point fingers and then do the creepy eye thing again. Then later, before we get to the therapist, love a great clips moment. I mean, when you see those sales up, you know something's going down, if you know what I mean. All right. Mike goes to see What's-Her-Face at Great Clips to get his haircut. And he seems to think that, oh God, what's her name? She looks like a Samantha. He thinks Samantha knows all about his love life. Like, they have gone to some deep places in their conversation. And Samantha really understands Mike and his follicles. So while What's-Her-Buzz is cutting his hair, he just goes into it like, yeah, you know, I'm not ready to get married, but I just don't know if I can do it. And God bless all the stylists in our lives, because all this time, all of us, like Mike, think they actually give a shit, that our stylists actually remember all the verbal diarrhea we have thrown at them throughout the years. But later, we find out from Samantha herself as she's standing outside that she didn't know about a lot of this shit. And Mike's sitting there like they're old pals. Now, that moment when she asked him out for a second, I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. I am so gullible in that moment. I was like, oh God, don't do it. Don't do it. He's going to say no. But then she brushed it off and it was a joke. Samantha, I mean, you guys know. Samantha, you know us. We know you. You were just joking. But God, Mike looks like an idiot. Not only because it was a subpar haircut. Actually, you know what? I take that back. It was probably a decent haircut. I don't know cutting techniques, but the style he chooses, not the right look. It's that Michael Scott from season one on The Office, slicked back up thing. He's got to go a little bit shorter, maybe do almost like a buzzed part, like Samantha. Do a buzz down the side and brush it slightly down. Go with the flow. Don't brush up. Everything that goes up must come down, and it's time for your hair to come down too. All right, now jump ahead to this therapy session. They finally go, and I love this therapist. Not to be my therapist, but I just want him to be my friend. He has a very calming energy. I just wouldn't want to destroy him with the issues that I would throw at him. Now, Mike made a lot of valid points and said the things that he needed to say, even though he didn't want to go. And would it have killed him to take the thing out of his ear? No. But Natalie also brought up some good points, that she left everything and she's here. So what's the deal? But Mike laid it all out on the line. Are we in love? Let's just take the whole wedding thing out of here. Are we even in love? And both of them say no. So to me, instead of wrapping up the session, I'd be like, do you want to be with each other? Yes, you could save it. Anyone can have a relationship and extend a relationship if you wanted to, if you kept working at it. But do you want to? At the end of the day, do you really want to be with this person? I think Natalie does want to be with Mike only because she's invested the time and she wants to have babies come hell or high water. It doesn't even matter with who, because for her, time's ticking. Mike obviously does not want to be with her. There doesn't seem to be anything Natalie enjoys doing that Mike enjoys doing, and vice versa. So wrap it up, call it a day before you bring kids into this. Okay, speaking of children, Rebecca and Ziad. What the hell is going on with these two? Much like Mike and Natalie, actually, what do these two have in common? I think they care about each other. I think Rebecca has stronger feelings for Ziad than Ziad has for Rebecca. But what are we doing here? Ziad obviously wants to go back home. He misses his family. He misses yelling at his niece. I think it might have been cute, but I wasn't really sure. I was kind of nervous because He's yelling and screaming very aggressively. And then he ripped open a bag of buns. I think they were supposed to be croissants. They may have been croissants at some point, but that dough has turned. A croissant has lighter, buttery consistency on the inside. The dough is a little airy. I mean, I know my pastries. And that had a lot more pull to it. You know, I wasn't expecting a scene with one of our 90 Day Fiancé guys eating a pastry in that way that was so aggressive and on the go. Normally we see, for example, a colt sitting down and picking up a Danish with one hand, taking a dainty bite and putting it down. Equally jarring, but in a different way. Zied's always keeping us on the edge of our toes. That Yeti, right? Zied, he's always just right on the edge. Speaking of other things that are keeping us on the edge of our seats, that Rebecca, surprise time, a temporary tattoo. Dear God. I mean, I like the attempt. I think it did actually make Zied look better. I think he should have worn it out instead of covering it up with his sweater. Really, Rebecca should have sold it to him that way. Remember those tight sweaters that you always like to wear? If you just put these sleeves on, it'll look just as slim-fitting as your wool Caillou sweater. Now, where would they go wearing the tattoos and the sweaters? And gee, I wonder why she wanted him to look so good that night. Well, it was to make all those young girls and wherever the hell they are jealous of this hottie over here. That dinner was so uncomfortable. Rebecca really thinks Zied is this hot piece of ass. Like he's, I was going to say Channing Tatum, but we all know how I feel about Channing Tatum, the most cross-eyed cyclops looking man in Hollywood. So let's just say The Rock. Rebecca thinks The Rock is coming in with her. So she's got to put her literal stamp on him, her tattoo on him, so all the ladies know he's taken. Over salads, very sad house salads with ranch. I'm not going to complain about it. I actually really enjoy a restaurant ranch. If it's Hidden Valley or if it's homemade, don't be giving me any wishbone shit. I'll know it when I can taste that saccharin. Anyhow, they're eating, and the idiots at the table asks him if he hunts for food. And I think that was just a dumb question. They heard the continent Africa, and they're thinking the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy, like they're running around killing lions for food. Are you fucking kidding me? What year is it? No, he's not hunting for food. Do you currently see him wearing a watch? Like he knows how to tell time. He's not looking at where the sun sets and the sun rises and if it's time to hunt for giraffe. God, I hate people sometimes. But I can't hate the girl that much because she did offer her family's trucks for moving. I do not think she had any intention to go on there and hit on him. I don't even think the producer said, why don't you flirt with Zied a little bit? Because I don't think that girl would. I don't think she can muster up a flirting with Zied even if she tried. I think she was just trying to be nice, carrying on the conversation because Rebecca certainly wasn't. She was just sitting there looking at the blondie down the table like bitch eating crackers. Oh, you have trucks? You do. You want to sleep with Zied? You do. No, Rebecca, you're fine. There are probably 15 other guys in that bar that are equally as attractive, if not more. I mean, Zied isn't ugly, but he's not some guy that girls are just going to rip their painted-on jeans off like Rebecca did. She's got to ease off with the jealousy stuff. I can't believe I'm sticking up for Zied here because I think he's pretty freaking annoying. But these two together, they're so incompatible. Speaking of incompatible, let's talk about probably the couple who I'm most concerned about on this show, and that's Yara and Jovi. Can you even believe the jump from God, she's a bitch to she's our bitch that Yara has had? Yara is my girl. Would I and could I ever be friends with her? No, because she'd probably eat me alive. She would hate me before I could hate her. But I love her on this show because she's the only person that will stick it to Jovi and Jovi's parents. So she goes to Jovi's parents' house. They don't know she's pregnant. She's exhausted. Still looks beautiful without makeup on. And freaking Jovi's mom starts lying about this party that she's throwing. Yara specifically said, I don't want to be around a lot of people, but she plans a huge party anyway, which is kind of bitchy. You don't want to go into a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law situation or relationship with a big lie like this. It's not going to go well for you. Now, Jovi's dad feels like he's totally entitled and has every right to talk about the way that Yara dresses, which is pretty freaking creepy. How long and how deep into her Instagram has he been scrolling through that to know about her dress choices on vacation, to know about her bikinis, what she wears day to day? Creepy, and also none of your damn business. If she wanted to wear underwear outside of New Orleans, that's what she should wear. And I loved the moment when they were talking about all Ukrainians wanting to come to the U.S. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they're all dying to come here. I'm not going to get political, but really, no matter where you lie, I don't think a lot of the world is dying to come to the U.S. right now. But here, his parents are saying Ukrainian women specifically, most of them want to come here for guys. Right, Yara? And right on cue, and a cue that Julia should take, she responds with, "No, that's just like saying all Americans are stupid." And as we know from watching this season, add to the list uncultured and fat, and now you know exactly how people look at us around the world. And that surely shut up Jovi's parents pretty damn quickly. Now, then they start talking about moving overseas or moving somewhere else where Yara's mom would be able to visit. It would be a much easier living situation, especially if Jovi is going to be traveling all the time. His home base doesn't necessarily trump everything else. You know, it doesn't matter where they are centrally located. They just need to be able to visit family both ways. Well, Jovi's family certainly doesn't like that because, number one, Jovi doesn't like the cold. And secondly, they don't want him to move away because then they can't see their grandkids. You mean like Yara's parents wouldn't be feeling the same way? I mean, these people, their heads are just as far up their asses as Jovi is into his. And by the way, is Jovi looking more and more like John Cryer, Ducky in Pretty in Pink, or is it just me? I just saw it the first time this week, and I don't know if it was the sunglasses or if it was the poofy hair. He's going into Cryer territory. Anyhow, let's talk about this party. They're getting ready. Yara looks stunning. Her makeup is perfect. Her hair is looking much better, the way it's blending all together. Jovi's hair, something's going on. They're shaking some sort of product into it. I don't know if it was like a dry shampoo powder or if it was a pomade something, but it's not making the situation any better. At that point, take that flat iron, hold it on his hair until it sizzles and until it falls off, because then he's not going to leave the house, Yara. You're not going anywhere. If Jovi is not looking good, Jovi's not going to go anywhere because he's a pompous motherfucker, and then you get your way. Or you just tell him, "We're buzzing your hair off," and it's either that or you don't get to drink tonight, and he's going to buzz his head off, trust me. And his hair probably looks way better, buzz down, go down to like a 2, 1 on the sides, maybe even like a 4 or 5 on top. Anyone can do that. Why am I suddenly sounding like Samantha? Guys, I don't mean to brag, but I might have my own little sailboat area at Great Clips pretty soon. Fingers crossed. All right. Oh, okay. Really quick. Jovi goes to his friend's house and they have this crawfish boil. And I could go off on a tangent here because I'm dying to know what a crawfish tastes like. I'm guessing shrimp, but I also Googled and found it's a mix of shrimp, crab, and lobster. And I don't know if I've ever actually had crab or lobster. So what's going on here? Is it that good that you can eat a table overflowing full? Like, how much leftovers are those 6 or 7 guys going to have? Because that was a shitload of food. Or waste. What do you do with all the animal shell? Is that biodegradable? Do you do like a compost pile? Do you actually eat the potatoes and the corn? Because corn is very delicious. And so is anything made with a potato. I have a lot of questions. But what I do know is that no newly pregnant woman is going to want to eat lukewarm crawfish that's been in Jovi's car. You know he was probably spitting over that thing. He probably had his beer spill over because obviously he drinks and drives, allegedly. I'm just assuming that he does. I don't know anything, but doesn't he look like the type? Anyhow, He brings that home, and poor Yara is starving, and he doesn't give a shit. I am so baffled why she just doesn't get the hell out of there, have the baby on her own if she wants to have the baby. If it's still early on, maybe she looks at other options. I'm not one to say what she should do, but they should not be together. The way he treats her is absolutely unacceptable. And his parents passing judgment on this woman that is putting up with their son, they should be giving her an award for even wanting to date him, let alone marry him and have children with him. This is probably one of his last chances to lock down a family, because women all over the world are going to be seeing this, and they're not going to want to settle down with Jovi. Now, Andrew, and that's it, just Andrew, because Amira is no longer around. You know, it's so tough for Andrew to come home and have his mommy pick him up at the airport after that exhausting vacation. How tired would you be after singles massages and Kobe beef and lounging by the, I was going to say lake, Jesus. That shows you how long it's been since I had a vacation. Lounging on the beach next to the ocean. He's going to come home and pout about how terribly the trip went. Now, his mom falls for it because she raised him. She created the monster, as all the other moms on the show did, obviously. That was a stupid thing to say. But she tells him, basically, you should wrap it up. You spent all this money, and to think Serbia is going to be the best option for you both is asinine. It's so stupid. And that's what Andrew said that really put me over the edge, was Serbia seems to be the best option for us. And when he says us, he means a mirror risk going back into some sort of immigration holding facility. He's terrible. He is a narcissist. And I knew the instant we saw the inside of his apartment, that purple couch and the teal shears. Yeah, you heard me. Shears. And then Gare Bear on the bed. All of it put together with a sword collection that he certainly has, just like Tariq. You know, there's some LARPing costumes, medieval Renaissance fair. I'm going to say down to the boots. I bet you he's got some pantaloons, a top with some sort of animal sinew leather lace-up, and there's probably some booties that he puts over his actual boots. You know, maybe he's got a pair of boots for Civil War reenactments, and then he wears those same ones when he goes camping for the Ren Fair. I just know this to be true, but anyhow, he's got all of that in his apartment, which is super creepy. It just makes Amira like an object that he was just going to bring in and plant in. Like, wow, she's going to be blown away by this little basket of, I don't know, there was like turquoise underwear in there and maybe a piece of chocolate. She's a woman. She's not a cartoon character, Kathy, that's going to come in and go, ack, a man, I'm so in love. He's a fool and I hate him. And I can't wait for a tell-all. And you know what? I'm going to hang on to that Discovery Plus until they have a tell-all interview, whatever, at the end of the season, because I can't wait to hear how he's going to justify everything he's doing. Now, Stephanie and Ryan. I really think Stephanie is my favorite one to watch. She's just so clueless. You know, like, she can make up that money. She owns a business. She'll be fine. And that's what makes me feel better about watching her fail. I mean, it sounds terrible, but when you're out there on a beach hula hooping, trying to show off to your student, because that's what it looked like. It looked like an elementary school PE teacher teaching the kids how they're going to hula hoop for halitosis or something. Like, they're going to do some sort of fundraiser and all the kids are going to hula hoop, and that teacher showing off to all their students what they got, still got it. Now, Ryan, after trying to hula hoop for Mrs. Stephanie, sits down, says he's exhausted, but really, he just doesn't want to make a fool of himself out on the beach. He probably works at that same place, right? He shares that he's really looking forward to going to Michigan. You know, all those sweet country concerts and the bars and restaurants. Jesus. I mean, Michigan's great. Don't get me wrong. Yes, Michigan, right? But I don't think it's what Ryan thinks it's going to be. And I really wonder what he thinks country concerts are like. Does he know what country music is? Because something tells me, maybe it's the skull wrap thing around his head, that he's really not into country. And can we talk about Stephanie's top? Great that she's using it for SPF. I mean, she definitely knows something about skincare. But what is the pattern on there? At one arm, it looked like there was a baby arm coming over it. And then the other side was geometric shapes. She's got terrible taste in clothing. But let's talk about what they got into, which is the perfect scenario to show what a manipulator can do. Because Stephanie clearly says, your mom never said thank you for the money. So I finally had enough and said, hey, I'm not sending any more money, or thanks for the money, Stephanie. And then your mom replied back really snippy. But somehow Ryan spun that situation into Stephanie having to apologize for giving his mom money. His mom blocked her, yet she's the one who's apologizing now. She's like, oh, tell your mom that I'm sorry she took offense to me saying that she should say thank you to the thousands of dollars that I've given her. Stephanie is in so over her head. And I don't know what she sees in him. None of you guys do either. I haven't heard anyone talk about how they understand why Stephanie is just not going to give up on this relationship, because look at old Q-Tip there walking down the beach. Ooh, those skinny legs that look like the number 11 really turned me on. I will never understand it. Oh, we got to talk about the dinner that they go on later. They go to this dinner and Stephanie's hair is insane. She's got my favorite kind of hair tie, those little telephone wire looking things. They're great. They're really good for your hair. And if you have them and you stretch them out, little tip here, put it on the end of a brush, take your hair dryer and blast the hair dryer on its hottest setting at it, and it'll shrink back down to size. Anyhow, after you put your hair in one of those, sit down and watch this dinner, because this is crazy. And this is where Stephanie does show her crazy pants. She brings up her friend who's a psychic who had this crazy prediction that Ryan's going to come to the States and he's going to leave her for a younger woman because he's going to want to have kids. And even though Ryan's saying, no, I don't want to have kids, I'm telling you I don't want to have kids, Stephanie's like, no, listen, your sperm have sent signals to my friend who's a psychic, and my psychic said it's true. Now, the psychic probably said it because all of us would say the same thing. But that would be annoying as hell to have anyone, Stephanie or the president, telling you, no, what you're telling me is not the truth because my psychic told me. Oh, really? You're telling me that? Well, my psychic told me what your heart and soul is going to do in the future. I don't really believe in the whole psychic thing. I think some mediums are very good at what they do and they can sense things. But a psychic, like predicting the future, I don't know about that. Or at least Stephanie's, because everything she said is kind of common sense. I mean, did she predict Stephanie standing on the beach, crossing her fingers, saying, maybe I'll get laid tonight. You owe me, kiddo. Actually, you know what Stephanie calls him, which is very weird and furthers the Mary Kay Letourneau, Vili Falau feels to me, is that she calls him dear. I don't think anyone's called me dear that's been under the age of 65. Or if Dave has ever said it, it's more in jest. But the way she says it to him is in a condescending, grandmotherly way, really. And she's not that old. I'm not meaning to say she's this old hag or anything, but the two of them together just really don't make sense. Now jump to 4 hours later, Stephanie's chasing him out the door screaming, are you kidding me, Ryan? Really? Oh my God, really? Okay, go ahead. Now she's giving him permission to leave as he's already left the property. So we see him walking away, and then we see a preview of Stephanie calling Harris, which shows where her real maturity is. That's great. Stephanie is a wonderful businesswoman and she has a good business mind, but her personal life, she needs to go see Mike and Natalie's therapist as soon as possible. Go back to Michigan and say yes to Michigan's therapist. Yes, Michigan. That's a commercial that will always play rent-free in my head, as the kids on TikTok say. All right, quick break, and then we're going to get into the season premiere of Sister Wives. Welcome back to Coyote Pass. It feels so good to be back, doesn't it? Now let's catch up with our wives, catch up with Cody, catch up with Mary, who I'm not even really grouping in with the wives because, yeah, we all know how that's going. Now, before we actually catch up to where the ladies are now, I want to talk about the new opening, the new intro. It may be the same as last season, but to me, it just feels different, even if it were the same. It reminds me of, and I'm not even saying this as an exaggeration, it reminds me of the opening of a Dateline episode or even an Unsolved Mysteries. Just think about that opening tune to either one of those shows, and that's exactly the same soundtrack. It's probably the same producer or conductor, whatever. It's amazing. It's eerie. It's a little religious-y feeling, and it just gives you that there's a lot of unhappiness and dark shadows that lie beneath. And they do. They really do. So now let's get into it. All the ladies are in the same homes where we left them last season. Robin had just gotten into that new rental, and they're looking to buy it, but there's a whole big thing with not closing in time and Cody's finances, blah, blah, blah. We'll briefly touch on that later because it's freaking boring. But Robin is in that house. Her kids are happy. Cody loves it. They're buying it. Christine is still in that house that she has always been in because she was the only one that knew we're probably going to be here for a while and those houses are never going to get built on Coyote Pass. So she bought a house. She's all good to go. Mary and Janelle are both renting the houses that they got in very last minute at the end of last season. They're all totally spread out from each other. They rarely see each other. And I'm really hoping that is everyone except Janelle and Christine, because they started forming that really sweet friendship last season. Remember, they would go on walks. I'm hoping that at least is happening frequently. Probably not, but I'm just going to hold that little hope in my heart. Now, Cody is exhausted because he's been driving from house to house, and now it feels like the family is totally disconnected because they're all in different places. Now, it's a little late for us to even be talking about why they even moved, because they have, and that's what ends up happening at that lunch that Janelle plans later. The only good thing going this season is Cody's hair-ish. I think he just needs to trim it all off, just buzz it off or get some sort of a haircut, because when he pulls it back, he's not a terrible looking guy, but with the hair down, even with the curly girl method, which is the positive thing was I was going to mention, it still looks crazy, but he is working on it. It's not so Doc from Back in the Future. Whoa, that's the second time I've brought that up. That was really bad. But listen, it's looking better. It looks healthier, I should say. Not better, it looks healthier. Now, what are they going to do? Because they're all feeling like they're not really a family and it's affecting their family culture. Well, Robin is going to leave it all up to God, as she is also doing with her home, which is so freaking frustrating. Because even Cody, a man of God, the principal person, the main man of their church, their family church, and even he's like, yeah, I don't think God is really underwriting the mortgage for us, Robin, so let's leave the big guy out of it. She still has this thing where she thinks a rental is going to come up so they can get out of the rental that they're in to then further rent more. Robin makes no sense at all. She tries to make it sound like she knows all about finances, especially when they're packing up that U-Haul truck, which is another expense that they've been paying for week to week, all of these U-Hauls that are loaded with their shit. But Robin doesn't care because God's going to provide. But Janelle is going to put a couple things in motion here. And I want to take a moment here to just lay out all my assholishness. Something's going on with Janelle's lip. I'm wondering if there was a mole removal, because in her talking heads, there's a janky lipstick line on the upper lip. And I think she was trying to even it out, which I can appreciate. And I can also appreciate that she's visited a dermatologist if indeed it was a mole removal, because I've been very concerned about it. It started to go asymmetrical and a little darker. And so has my personality, because I'm talking about another grown woman's mole. But listen, it's there. We all see it. I'm hoping that's what's going on. Now, Janelle invites all the women to this lunch at Pizza El Forno. And I'm wondering if Janelle is even more of a genius than I thought. She's a very smart woman. We all know that. But I'm wondering if Janelle picked this place purposely to perform a test. Will they all order one pizza to share? Can they agree on the same topping? Or do they have a different idea of what should be on top? If it's a circle pizza pie, how many pieces does each wife get? Or if it's a square, which corner or quadrant of the Coyote Pass, I mean pizza, will each wife get? Do you see what I'm saying? Now, it doesn't end up being a pizza after all. They each get some sort of roasted vegetable platter. Robin seemed to be the only one who ordered a pizza, but it looked like there was grains or like quinoa sprinkled on top. And then every other thing on the table looked like a roasted squash. There looked to be a lot of sweet potatoes. I think there was a whole beet on Christine's plate. And good for them if that was the case, if they're going all vegetarian. But if I'm going to a pizza place, I better have a deep dish in front of me, and I better have some mozzarella sticks and some fried zucchini to start. And a Diet Coke. Just kidding. I don't drink Diet Coke. But is anyone else feeling hungry? All right, let's move forward here. Janelle is going to ask some tough questions, but before we can do that, you know, I have to be a little snarky, and I need to talk about their choice of wardrobe, because I feel like at this point, I want them to move away from the floral tops. Floral is very big in this family. Janelle is the only one that really accepts solids, and she looks great in blues and even dark reds. She looked great at that lunch. Christine really embraces the plaid and the flannel, and it looks great on her. And she's also one to take risks. If you notice, she'll mix a lot of wool and silk. And I don't know if that's necessarily a good choice, but at least she's going there. The other two, Mary and Robin, every season just gets worse and worse with them. It's the patterns, and there's lots of, what is that, like paisley mixed with a stripe of floral. And Mary's brows, they've moved south along with the family this season. They seem lower on her eyelids, which is a peculiar choice. The pleather coat, also an interesting one. I'm wondering, and I'm sure some of you can tell me this, I'm wondering if that's maybe a new accessory, a flare accessory in the LuLaRoe line. Like a little edgy, sexy, sassy mama on the town sort of thing. Of course, you still need to have some fleur-de-lis mixed in. Mary's still wearing her fleur-de-lis. Or was that... Didn't Cody one season make each wife a symbol or a piece of jewelry? One of them got a fleur-de-lis. One of them got hands holding something. Or am I getting that mixed up with the paintings? Was that Mary who made a painting for each wife? I need to go back and do a full rewatch. Anyhow, let's just get to showtime here. The serious questions that Janelle's going to ask. Everyone's on edge, but she puts him at ease and is like, no, it's really not that big of a deal. All I wanted to ask was, why did you enter into this life and accept the principle of plural marriage? Janelle, if everyone's on edge, just be like, okay, yeah, it's going to get a little serious. Don't put him at ease and then just throw them a huge question like that. But here we go. They're forced to answer it. No surprise, Mary just says, I was raised in it. Christine has always said the same thing, that she liked the big family, she was raised in it, and she wanted to have that sisterly bond because her grandmas had that. And then Robin just thought having a big family was really cool. She also was raised in it, if I remember correctly, but she doesn't like talking about that. She tries to have us believe she just likes having a ton of kids running around. Now, Cody drops a real bomb. We saw this in the previews, but hearing him say it in real time was really jarring because I don't even think some of the wives have heard him say this. He said he doesn't want to be an advocate of plural marriage anymore, that he feels like he's got all the love that he wants, but now he's seeing his wives are not getting what they want. They're not feeling fulfilled. So how can he go to lobbyists and say, we need to make this legal and I believe everything about this, if he sees that it's actually painful for his wives? That's huge. Remember all those seasons where he was protesting with big signs and he's giving speeches and all this stuff? And now he's like, yeah, that's a no for me. And I have to give him credit for that because he's realizing it's not just all about me. I have four women around me that are varying degrees of miserable, and it's because of me. And the question he asks them, maybe this was asked before, but it seemed to be the first time he was asking it, probably with the comfort of cameras. No one can blow up to a certain extent. Why did you even want to do this? Why do you want plural marriage? Is it because you truly wanted it? Or was it because, I want to use his wording here, or is it because your religion commanded you to do it? Whoa. I think all of them are going to say they wanted to, but then that goes really deep because are you wanting to do it because you were, I don't want to use the word indoctrinated, but were you raised to see plural marriage as a good thing because of your religion? I mean, that's kind of like a chicken and the egg scenario, right? So maybe that's not even a fair question. I'm sure in their free will mind, they wanted to, but then you have to look, where does that want come from? And maybe that's where we need their therapist, Nancy, to come in. Now, Janelle speaks up and says, at least for herself, she was really depressed in Vegas. And that shocked me because I thought Janelle really liked it, that she liked having her own house and her own space. Where would that idea have come from? Oh, I don't know, the endless seasons of all the wives telling us how great it is that they can have their own homes and that they're all near each other and the kids can go house to house. And I have to admire Janelle for bringing all the dirty details and all of her feelings up. She called on Mary, being like, hey, you and I have actually talked about this stuff. Of course, Mary is like, what? I don't remember that. I wonder why I don't remember this conversation. Probably because you've been talking about Janelle behind her back to Robin. You know that's happening. But I thought that was great that at least Mary and Janelle have had some honest discussions in a sisterly, friendly way. And Janelle gave her some grace about it. She didn't call her on the carpet. She wasn't mean about it, but she was like, hey, wingman, remember we were sitting on the couch? Remember it was like 18 hours ago and a couple months ago and a couple months before that? She gave Mary an opportunity to say, oh, yeah, I remember that. But no, Mary's got to leave Janelle out to dry like she always does. Where am I? I could talk about this endlessly. And you guys are like, yeah, we know. So why does the family feel different now? Let's just get to the heart of it. Is it because we're living in different places? Is it because we're not on Cody's sack anymore? What's going on? Mary points it to the fact that she just doesn't have friends here. Okay, well, whatever. We know that's not true. Janelle says it's the distance with the homes, and that includes Vegas, which is an interesting dynamic because, again, they were all close to each other there, which means what's the common denominator? They're all sharing Cody, and that's what we're going to find out this season, but we're not there yet. I'm getting too excited. Robin then breaks out the tears, and she's like, is this about the pink elephant in the room? Is it because I joined the family? And Janelle feels bad and gets up and goes and comforts her. And everyone's assuring her, no, no, it's not because of you. It's not because of you. And I don't necessarily think they think it is. Maybe. But anyhow, Christine feels like she's a single mom. And Cody just comes in and disrupts the rhythm in her single mom day. It could be at 10 o'clock. It could be at 6 o'clock. It doesn't matter. It just messes up the flow. And I understand what she's saying. Obviously, I don't share a husband with anyone. But if you tend to be the person that's the default parent, actually, the ladies from For Crying Out Loud always say that, you know, the default parent, and it's not always the mom. Often it's the parent who works at home or who is the stay-at-home parent. you're the default parent and you have a certain way of doing things. And when the other one comes in, it can mess up your flow. I know when Dave was traveling a lot and I was home with the kids, when he would come home after a certain amount of stretch, it wouldn't annoy me, but yeah, it kind of messes up your flow. You get used to it, but obviously it really bothers Christine and she doesn't like that because there's also some other things that upset her, like Cody always being on the phone. He's not fully engaged in the moment and he's like, yeah, I'm not engaged because there's angst between us, so I'm checking out before we can even start arguing. And then this opens up the floodgates for Christine, and I thought it was very brave of her to say, I'm jealous, I'm insecure, I think all of you guys hate me, you probably think I'm a bitch, but it's only because I'm setting up my boundaries, and now I have to juggle with, do I care that you think I'm a bitch, or do I not? Do I just need to stand my ground, so to speak? Now, Mary starts getting all quiet in this moment as the ladies are talking about whether they do or don't feel like a single mom. Oh, surprise, surprise. Guess who doesn't? Robin. Probably because Cody is at Robin's most of the time. And they're going to say it's because she has the youngest kids, X, Y, and Z. But it's because she's obviously Cody's favorite. Now, Mary's quiet and she's doing that little look around because she's going to say, I didn't know what to say in that moment because I've been feeling like the single mom and I've been feeling insecure and jealous. And if she's jealous, she doesn't even realize how I must feel because Cody doesn't even love me anymore. I know that that is what that bitch was thinking. Let's not forget the fact that entire family, Cody and her three sister wives, forgave Mary for cheating on Cody, emotionally having phone sex, cyber sex, whatever the kids have these days. She was doing that with another person who, of course, we know she was catfished, but she wouldn't have been catfished if she wasn't sending deep-throating banana pictures to strangers on the internet. All right. Now, where are we here? Oh, okay. So Robin and Cody get the call from their lender. We already talked about that. Maddie, Caleb, and the baby. You gotta see the baby. They go to visit, and I find it very interesting that they all meet at Christine's house. Even though Christine isn't biological grandma, they meet at Christine's. I love it because I love that all the other siblings, the older kids, all love Christine, and they really do see her as a second mom. I just found it very interesting that that is where they chose to film because Janelle's house, if I remember correctly, that rental, it wasn't tiny. It maybe wasn't as up to date as Christine's, but there was plenty of room there. Anyhow, Maddie, Caleb, who drives me nuts, he always will. Axel, who has gotten cuter and actually kind of looks like a little Bentley from Teen Mom. And the new baby, why am I forgetting her name? Oh, Evie. They show up to visit and it's the first time everyone's seen the baby. So they're all excited. And that baby is so freaking chilled out to have that many people, not to mention the camera crew and the boom and all the lights and all that kind of stuff around. She didn't make a peep. Perfect little angelic baby. I wish mine were even a fraction of that calm. We remember that Evie had some, I don't even want to say disabilities. She has limb differences is what they were calling it. It's a syndrome called FATCO, and I don't know what the acronym is for. She is missing bones, fingers, and toes. And I'm pretty sure a couple months ago, she had one of her limbs shortened or amputated to get it ready for that prosthetic. So I'm pretty sure that's what Janelle was referring to. Now, then they talk about what Maddie's kids and everyone else's future kids. Oh, God, Tony and McKelty are pregnant, by the way, you guys. Or I should say McKelty, because Tony's not pregnant unless he's pregnant with a Tres Leches cake and 4,000 street tacos. That's going to be, oh, my God, will that be on the season? If that is on the season, I'm going to be so freaking happy because, you know, leading up to that wedding and those wedding episodes were my most favorite time in life. Those pinatas. Bailamos. Let's move forward. No, it wasn't Bailamos. Baila conmigo or something. Anyhow, I'm going to get too reminiscent about that wedding. You might get hit with a stick. speaking of people who might get hit with a stick, Mary is the only one of the grandmas who has not given herself a name. And she said it so condescending, like, you know, I'm not going to give myself a name for what my grandkids are going to call me. I'm just going to let them do that themselves. Let me guess, she's really just complaining because everyone else took the good names. Because we had Janelle, who took Grandma, Robin takes Bubby, and Christine took Oma. So what's Mary going to get left with? It's fine. The baby can just call me Aunt Mary. I understand. You know, she is just warming up to that pity party. Now, where's Cody in all of this? Oh, he's a doting grandpa. It's actually very cute to see how he is with his grandkids. But he's seeing everyone getting along during Maddie and Caleb's visit. So he's like, you know what? If all of you wives can mingle and get along now, you guys fix your relationship. I'm taking myself out of it. You guys figure it out. Well, that's all great and dandy. But why are they getting along? Because Mary's not there, remember? Mary said that she had to go out of town for something, which I actually think is bullshit. But even if she did, the reason they're getting along is because Mary is the one. She is the sour pickle in the jar. No, pickles are supposed to be sour. You guys get the idea. Mary is the bad apple. You take her out of it and everyone else can at least get along. Now, at the end of the episode, we see this preview about COVID. Cody only has enough time and space, and maybe it's best for everyone if he doesn't go house to house. Should we all put money down on him staying at Robin's? For the little kids, because the little kids need him, not the older ones going through tough stuff like a move and puberty, nothing like that. I'm curious. If anyone knows, I actually don't want to know. Don't tell me where Cody ended up during COVID. I'm hoping that Christine is not a COVID denier because it sounds like she's saying, well, we're still going to go out everywhere. We're not staying home. No, no way. We'll see what that exactly entails. Oh, and then, of course, we see Mary getting totally shafted and denied by Cody, which should be fun to watch because I'm a terrible person. Now, that leads me to this week's Would You Rather. Would you rather live with Janelle, Robin, Christine, or Mary? Oh yeah, I'm asking the tough question. The question that Cody probably can't even honestly answer himself. Which sister wife would you rather live with? Some might say Mary because she's out and about with all of her friends so often. Some might say Christine because she can cook, although there's Truly and a bunch of kids there. Janelle would be pretty laid back, but her house is always chaotic and messy and cluttered. Robin, oh God, I don't know if I could deal with her and little Areola and Solomon running around, only because I'm out of that stage. So I'm going to pitch a tent in Coyote Pass and I'll sleep outdoors. I'm going to go all grizzly man out there, except minus the death part. And that's my final answer. All right, you guys, thank you for listening. Check the show notes for the Patreon links. Remember, this week we have Teen Mom OG and Real Housewives of Salt Lake City coming up. And on Total Request Podcast, we are covering Bob's Burgers and Framing Britney Spears. Please stay warm and stay safe. It's getting pretty nasty out there. Wear a damn mask and stay salty.